blessing. There you go. Turn your Bibles with me tonight, please, to the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 15. 1 Corinthians, chapter 15. Brother Dennis Carl was here several weeks ago and told a story in one of his messages in Revival Fire paper. He said this: a friend of mine was out soul winning on a Tuesday. He began to witness to a man, but he cut him short and said, "Look, preacher, I'm busy. I don't have time to talk about that stuff right now. I'll talk to you on Thursday. Right now I have more important business to attend to." Could I say to you, I'm not sure anybody ever has any more important business than the care of their soul. So the preacher went on making some other visits. The next day, he heard that that same man was in a car accident and was killed on impact. He had said, "I'll talk to you on Thursday," but he died on Wednesday and went to hell. But that's not the end of the story. At the funeral home, the preacher spoke to the brother of the man who had been killed. He was also lost, and he urged him to trust Christ and be saved. And the young man said, "Look, I know my brother died unexpectedly and went to hell, but I'm not going to go to hell. I'm just not ready to get saved right now. But I promise you, I'm going to get saved before I die. I'll call you when I'm ready." Would you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 35? This is the chapter, of course, about the resurrected body. The Apostle Paul, writing to the church at Corinth, trying to clear their confusion over the issues of what happened when a person dies, what happens with the body, and so on. He said in verse 35, "But some man will say, 'How are the dead raised up? And with what body do they come?' Thou fool, that which thou sowest is not quickened, except it die. And that which thou sowest not that body that shall be, but bare grain. It may chance of wheat or of some other grain, but God giveth it a body as if it pleased him, and to every seed his own body." And he's describing how all seeds are different. Verse 42, "So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown in corruption." Our mortal bodies, once they die, are corruptible, and they are sown in corruption. "It is raised in incorruption." That is, our resurrected bodies will not decay, will not be corruptible. "It is sown in dishonor." No matter what you try to do to make a human body that is dead as beautiful and is proper and show as much honor as you can to it, the truth is, a dead body, there is something dishonorable about a dead body. It is raised in glory, and so our resurrected bodies are going to be glorious. "It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body." There is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. I want to talk to you tonight on the subject of death specifically. I'll tell you a little bit more about what subject in relation to death that I want to talk about. But did you notice that death is a subject we'd rather laugh about than deal with seriously? And I'm not sure that's all totally wrong. For instance, a group of 9-year-olds was asked their opinions on the subject of death, and Jim said, "When you die, they bury you in the ground and your soul goes to heaven, but your body can't go to heaven because it's too crowded up there already." Judy said, "Only the good people go to heaven. The other people go where it's hot all the time, like down in Florida." John replied, "Maybe I'll die someday, but I hope I don't die on my birthday because it's no fun to celebrate your birthday if you're dead." I would think that's probably true. And little Marcia said, "When you die, you don't have to do homework in heaven unless your teacher happens to be there too." So I don't know that it's wrong to laugh. By the way, there was false doctrine in there. I hope you know that was just children talking, all right? Some wag made up this story about pecans in the cemetery. On the outskirts of a small town, there was a big old pecan tree just inside the cemetery fence. One day, two boys filled up a bucket full of nuts and sat down by the tree out of sight and began dividing the nuts. One for you, one for me, one for you, one for me, said one boy. Several of the pecans dropped and rolled down toward the fence. Another boy came riding along on the bicycle. As he rode past, he thought he heard voices from inside the cemetery. He sat down to investigate. Sure enough, he heard, one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me. He just knew what it was. Jumped back on his bike and he rode just around the bend. He met an old man with a cane hobbling along. Come here quick, said the boy. You won't believe what I heard. Satan and the Lord are down at the cemetery dividing up the souls. The man said, beat it, kid. Can't you see it's hard for me to walk? When the boy insisted, though, the man hobbled with his cane slowly to the cemetery. Standing by the fence, they heard, one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me. The old man whispered, boy, you've been telling me the truth. Let's see if we can see the Lord himself. Shaking with fear, they peered through the fence, yet were unable to see anything. The old man and the boy gripped the wrought iron bars of the fence tighter and tighter as they tried to get a glimpse at the Lord. And at last they heard this, one for you, one for me, that's all. Now let's go get those nuts by the fence and we'll be done. And they said the old man made it back to town a full 5 minutes ahead of the kid on the bicycle. A tough old cowboy, somebody sent me this on email this week. A tough old cowboy from Dillon, Montana, counseled his grandson that if he wanted to live a long life, the secret was to sprinkle a pinch of gunpowder on his oatmeal every morning. By the way, don't try that, all right? But anyway, that's the story. And the grandson, they said, did this religiously to the age of 103. And when he died, he left 14 children, 30 grandchildren, 45 great-grandchildren, 25 great-great-grandchildren, and a 15-foot hole where the crematorium used to be. Somebody sent me this, and as soon as I read it, I said, that's probably how I'm going to die. And the headline says, Berlin, January the 11th, 2007, man's homemade mole killer kills him instead. If you could see my yard right now, the moles are back in full force. A German retiree who wired up a high voltage cable to try to wipe out the moles digging up his garden killed himself instead, police said Thursday. Mr. Werner, police spokesman in Stralsund, north of Berlin, said the 63-year-old retired construction foreman was found dead in the garden of his weekend house next to a 380-volt cable and metal spikes rammed into the ground. Werner, the police spokesman, noted the moles survived. He said the voltage was enough to run a cement mixer or a heavy-duty power saw, but he said it was a rather unorthodox method to try to get rid of moles. I said we'd rather laugh about death than deal with it seriously. In 1 Kings chapter 1, David apparently didn't want to deal with end-of-life decisions. In verse 1, it says that now King David was old and stricken in years, and as he is lying on his deathbed, his son Adonijah exalts himself and tries to take the throne of the kingdom of Israel and almost did so with help from General Joab and Abiathar the priest. And finally, loyal Nathan the prophet saw what was going on, went to Bathsheba, who went to the king and said, King David, do you realize what is happening? And told him, and David took action and installed Solomon, his son, on the throne. Could I ask you, have you made the preparations that you need to make for your death? I believe every Christian ought to have a will. I believe you ought to have planned what is going to happen to your physical and financial assets, especially if you have children. You should have a decision concerning what is going to happen to your children, because if you don't, the state may decide that for you, and that's not something that you want to do. Just your physical and financial assets are tremendously important, what you do in relation to them. It could be stocks, bonds, real estate, cash. Listen to this, a dedicated Christian couple who had no heirs as far as they knew accumulated a sizable estate. They told their pastor they wanted to leave everything they had to Christian causes. Like so many good Christians who have good intentions, they never got around to writing their wills or completing any estate plans, and they were both killed in a head-on collision by a drunk driver who did not get a scratch. And when the estate was settled, a drunken degenerate who claimed to be a fifth cousin inherited their entire estate. And within 90 days, they said it was all in the hands of gamblers and prostitutes in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm asking you, are you ready? Are your end-of-life decisions made? I got an email recently from Brother Will Hyde, our missionary in South Africa. He said, we have some things for which to praise the Lord concerning our project we call projection. The Lord prompted us to pray about some projection equipment, and we sent out an email and received a phone call. And these folks' mother, who passed to glory back last November, left some funds to be invested in ministry project. They offered us $3,000 to get the equipment we would need. And as it wound up, we got the projector, the DVD player, a Honda generator. We totaled it all together, and it came to $2,935, and we had $65 left over. And can you imagine though that lady up in heaven, or those folks up in heaven, looking down and seeing what their financial assets were accomplishing after they had left this earth? But there's another end-of-life decision that you need to make, especially as a Christian, before you leave this world, and that is the disposition of your body itself. What do you want done with your body? We preachers preach a great deal about death and resurrection. We don't preach a whole lot about the earthly body after death. Why? Because it is certainly not the most important part of us. The most important part of you is your spirit and your soul. But your body is important. I haven't seen anybody's spirit running around here lately without their body. Have you? I realized a few years ago that this is the only body I'm ever going to have on this earth. And actually, it was quite a disappointment to me when I thought about it. You know, this is it. And it's, you know, one of these days it's going to be gone. And I remember one of our good men, Russ Schaefer, several years ago, before he went to heaven, some months or years before that, he'd had a stroke and his left side was useless. Y'all remember this? He couldn't walk, and then he gradually came back, but his left hand and arm never recovered. And he sort of walked around like this, and he would laugh and joke about, quote, my gimpy arm. His left eye was weak from then on. His tolerance for pain was about gone. And now I think about what he looks like today, and I tell you, it's a whole lot different. Thank God for our hope. But I want to ask you, what you're going to do about your body after you die? What are you going to have your loved ones do with your body after you die? Specifically, I want to speak to you tonight on the subject, should Christians choose burial or cremation? That seems to be the choices in our day, burial or cremation. And I want to say to you that I believe that you should bury the body. And I want to give you tonight seven reasons why the human body, especially the body of a Christian, should be buried. Now, please understand me here. I'm not preaching this to make somebody feel guilty. If you have a loved one who has been cremated, most people here tonight will have experienced that at some time or other. And so I'm not doing it for that purpose, but I've heard the arguments in favor of cremation which is the burning of the human body, instead of burial, which is the, obviously, most of us know what that is. Most everybody here tonight would know what cremation is. Most of the arguments for cremation go like this. And lots of Christians have thought this. Many Christians have never really stopped to ask, what does the Bible say about this? In fact, I had a wonderful Christian man say to me, well, as far as I know, the Bible doesn't say anything about whether you bury or cremate, and so we're just going to cremate. And they didn't ask, so I didn't give an answer. And of course, I'm a pastor, and I'm going to love folks. And ultimately, the body, once the body is gone, the body is gone. And if you're saved, you're in heaven no matter what happens to your body. So let's get that straight right up front, all right? No matter what. But I've heard the arguments, and the arguments go like this. Well, you know, it's just a body. And it's a temporary thing at best. And, you know, I really am. Here's what folks say. You know, I really am not going to care what they do with my body after I die. I'm going to be gone. They can just do anything with it. I don't really care. And besides that, this is the big thing. Boy, financially, you realize how much it costs to bury a body. And the truth is, an average funeral in our day can cost $8,000 to $12,000. And cremation can be done for $2,000 to $2,500 or maybe even less. Now, having brought out those arguments and just laid them right on the table, I want to tell you why I still believe, as Christians, if you're faced with the decision of what to do, you should ask that your body be buried no matter what it costs, or that you should plan to bury the body of your loved ones. Why? Number one, because burial was the ordinary practice by godly people throughout the entire Bible. Now, let me begin right here by answering an objection that some people make at this point. The objection is something like this. They'll say, well, yes, in the Bible, God's people practice burial. The example is clearly there. But are we bound to follow those examples? There are no direct commands in the Bible. But I would remind you that there are many areas of human life where there are no direct commands in the Bible. And yet the Bible ultimately speaks to every area of human life. Romans 15:4 says, for whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning. 1 Corinthians 10:11 says, now all these things happened unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. And so the Bible, in these passages, God is telling us we're to follow the Bible's examples as well as its direct instructions. And burial was clearly the ordinary practice by godly people in the Bible. The first mention of burial in the Bible was when Abraham wanted to bury his wife Sarah. In Genesis chapter 23, verse 4, he said, I'm a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me a possession of a burying place with you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And he buried her at great expense. It would have been cheaper, easier to have burned his wife's body. He chose to bury her. That is the first mention of this in the Bible. And remember the law of first mention, that it is a key to understanding what to do throughout the Bible, because Abraham is the father of the faithful. Abraham is the father of the Jewish nation. Abraham was the man of faith. And when his wife died, the first example in the Bible was that he buried his wife. Two chapters later, in Genesis chapter 25, verses 8 through 10, Abraham himself was buried. In Genesis 35, 19 and 20, Rachel was buried. Then Isaac in that same chapter was buried. In Genesis 49, 33, and chapter 50, verses 1 through 13, we have great detail about the embalming of Jacob and the directions that he left for his burial. In Genesis chapter 50, verse 26, Joseph was buried. In Deuteronomy, this is interesting, Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 23, even a criminal was not to be left hanging on the tree overnight. He was to be taken down, his body was to be taken down and buried. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, verses 5 and 6, Moses, the servant of the Lord, died in the land of Moab, and he, referring to God himself, what would God do with Moses' body? God is God. God could do anything with Moses' body. God could have literally taken Moses' body out off of this earth. He did that with Enoch and Elijah. He could have done it with Moses if he had chosen to. God could have done anything with Moses' body. What did he choose to do? God himself buried him in a valley in the land of Moab, but no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. In Joshua chapter 24, Joshua was buried. Eleazar was buried. 1 Samuel 25:1, Samuel was buried. 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 10, David was buried. Then in Matthew chapter 14, John the Baptist was buried. He had been beheaded. His body was horribly disfigured, but his disciples took him with love and respect and buried his body. In John chapter 19, verse 39, Jesus had died. He was really dead. And there came Nicodemus also, which at the first came to Jesus by night and brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100-pound weight. Notice they're taking care of the body. Then took they the body of Jesus and wound it in linen clothes with the spices. Listen to this. As the manner of the Jews is to bury. And so it was the manner, it was the custom, it was the accepted practice that the Jews from whom we have the Old Testament and who gave us the great majority of the New Testament, and it was the manner of the Jews to bury. In Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira had disobeyed God. They had lied to the Holy Spirit. And they lied to the leaders of the early church. And yet when God smote them dead, they were each taken out in Acts chapter 5 and were buried. Acts chapter 8, Stephen was buried. And if you're following this, that's actually, I didn't give them all, but the word bury or burial occurs 42 times in the Bible. You remember in John chapter 11, the story of how Lazarus had died. And they buried him. And 4 days later, you remember what happened? Jesus came and cried, Lazarus, come forth. And Lazarus came forth from the dead. Could I ask you a simple question here? What if they had burned Lazarus' body? What if he had not been buried? Burial took place in the Bible even when it was difficult and expensive. Let me give you an example of that. God's people toward the end of the book of Genesis, we're told that Joseph's body was kept for over 400 years in Egypt. It was embalmed and kept for over 400 years, then carried through the 40 years of wilderness wanderings before finally being buried in the promised land. Joshua 24:32, and the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, buried they in Shechem. This is all the way in Joshua chapter 24. In Exodus chapter 13, we're told Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. Here they are leaving Egypt. They can't leave him in Egypt. They got to take his bones with them. And Joseph's father, Jacob, Genesis chapter 50, verse 2, Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel. Why? Because he had charged them earlier in chapter 49 and said, bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. How much simpler would it have been for the Israelites to have cremated Joseph and carried his ashes in a little tiny container all over Egypt, all over the wilderness wanderings until finally they got in the, but no, that was not an option for them. So I say, biblically, I believe you should choose burial because burial was the ordinary practice by godly people in the Bible. Secondly, I love this point. Don't miss this one. You ought to choose burial because though the body may be dead, God is not yet done with the body. He is not yet done with a dead body. In 1 Corinthians 15, we read it just now, it is a seed that is sown. And in Romans chapter 8, verse 22 and 23, for we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruit of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption to wit, what? The redemption of our body. God is going to redeem not only our soul. Thank God one of these days I'm going to have a redeemed body as well. Why all the trouble and expense of burial? Because it is our certain hope that the same person who died will be raised in the same body. Did you hear that? Only phenomenally changed. The physical body is the seed for the resurrection body. You plant a seed, it decomposes, and the new plant comes forth. You don't destroy the seed. You plant it. From that decomposing seed comes forth new life. When we bury our loved ones, we are planting the seed for their resurrected body. And that plant that comes up is not the same as the seed, but it comes from the seed and has a definite, distinct likeness to that which was planted. And then, of course, it'll be powerful instead of weak, immortal instead of mortal, glorious instead of decaying, and heavenly instead of earthly. I have wonderful news for you today, and I'm talking to everybody here. Everybody here, your body is not going to stay in the grave forever. I didn't say your soul, I said your body. The Bible talks about the resurrection of life and the resurrection of damnation. What would happen if you died right now? Now, if you talk to a cultist, they will tell you that they aren't going to heaven. They're planning to live on this earth. Are they right or not? Could you show somebody from the Bible that when you die, you are going to heaven? Can you show them that? Let me give you the verses right now. 1 Thessalonians 5:23 refers to your whole spirit and soul and body. And then 2 Corinthians 5:8, Paul said, we're confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. Where's the Lord? 1 Peter 3:22, Jesus is gone into heaven and is on the right hand of God in heaven. Did you know even the Old Testament saints understood this thought of the resurrection? The oldest book in the Bible is the book of Job. And in chapter 19, verse 25, Job said, I know that my Redeemer liveth and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh I shall see God. He's saying that he's going to be resurrected and God is not done with the body. He is going to resurrect that body. So he's going to use the body that you plant as a seed. Listen to this statement from Encyclopedia Britannica. There can be little doubt that the practice of cremation in modern Europe was at first stopped and thereafter prevented in great measure by the Christian doctrine of the resurrection of the body. Why have we buried traditionally for centuries? It is our Christian heritage as a nation. Why is that shifting? Because we are losing the sight of our Christian heritage. Oxford Classical Dictionary from 1970 said, both Jew and Christian objected to cremation. Paul Mayer said this, as for England, the idea of cremation reappeared in the middle of the 19th century. Sir Henry Thompson, an agnostic, was chiefly responsible for the founding of the first cremation society in 1874. But it was not until 1902 that an act of Parliament legalized the practice of cremation. Did you catch that? It wasn't even legal in England while England had a Christian heritage, while at the same time guaranteeing exemption from participation for any minister who found it repugnant to his convictions. They recognized that most ministers would not go along with it. This is 100 years ago. This coincided with the liberal theology that began to invade the churches and today finds its expression in rejecting the belief in the resurrection of the body and the literal physical resurrection of Jesus himself. This view rejects the idea that the hope of redemption includes also that of the body. You see what's happening? With agnosticism and liberalism has come a putting down of the doctrine of the resurrection. And as the world has done away with the doctrine of the resurrected body, then they have begun to move to cremation instead of burial. Brother David Cloud, I found a lot of material in this sermon as I was researching his booklet on cremation. Here, listen to one of the things he said. Historically, burial has been a testimony of faith in the bodily resurrection. Historically, cremation has been practiced among those such as Hindus who deny the bodily resurrection and who believe in reincarnation. Historically, wherever the gospel of Jesus Christ has been accepted, pagan practices such as cremation have been rejected. The increase in cremation in North American society has paralleled the wholesale rejection of the Bible in this same society. As paganism increases its steely hold on American and Canadian hearts, cremation becomes increasingly popular, now to the point that just a few years ago it was very rare, 5%. I'll give you more statistics here in a minute. But now almost anywhere you go in the United States, 2/3 of the deaths result in cremation instead of burial. Have you ever heard of cremation described? USA Today, December the 5th, 1995. The 3-hour process of burning a body and grinding it to small fragments often takes place away from loved one's eyes. The body, usually dressed but stripped of all jewelry, slides into a brick-lined oven that looks like a big bread oven. Pacemakers are removed because their batteries can explode at high temperatures. Silicone implants, which can't be removed, are creating problems for crematory operators who say the remains often stick to the melting silicone. The gas or oil-fired ovens are heated to about 1,700 degrees. Although often called ashes, the remains are actually bone fragments. These are swept with a giant hoe-like scraper from the bottom of the retort and put in a container to cool down. Any large debris, such as dental crowns or hip prostheses, is removed. Everything is then ground to granule-sized pieces. The whole process takes about 3 hours, and the result is about 6 pounds of remains compact enough to fit into a shoebox. And that describes cremation. Did you know when you bury a body, you are giving a testimony that you believe in resurrection? That is what you're saying. That's the reason you bury a body. Third reason I believe Christians should choose burial is because the destruction of a body or an object by fire is a picture of the wrath of God. Listen to this. The destruction of a body or an object by fire is a picture of the wrath of God. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 6 describes, Peter describes how Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed by fire. The world that was destroyed by fire, and God rained down fire and brimstone on Sodom and Gomorrah. It was a picture of God's judgment, God's wrath upon the horrible sin of sodomy or homosexuality. You also have the example of Nadab and Abihu. In Leviticus chapter 10, the sons of Aaron took either of them his censer, put fire therein, and put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord. And there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. So it was a picture of the wrath of God. Leviticus chapter 21 verse 9 told, in fact, this is one of the few places where the death of someone by burning was commanded in the Bible. And the immoral daughter of a priest was her body. The Bible says she shall be burned with fire. A picture again of the wrath of God. In Numbers chapter 16 verse 35 is the story of the men who rebelled along with Korah. And it says there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. In Exodus chapter 32 verse 20. After the children of Israel had made that golden calf as an idol to worship, while Moses was up on the mount receiving the Ten Commandments of the law, when he came down, he says, he took the calf which they had made and burnt it in the fire and ground it to powder and strawed it upon the water and made the children of Israel drink of it. They burned it in the fire. In fact, many times in the Old Testament, you see that when they dealt with idols, they would burn the idols. It was a picture of the wrath of God. In Joshua chapter 7 verse 25, after Achan had sinned and taken those things that he should not have taken from the city of Jericho, and God said there's sin in the camp, and he was holding the whole camp back, and Achan was found out. And then Joshua said, "Why hast thou troubled us? The Lord shall trouble thee this day." And all Israel stoned him with stones and burned them with fire after they had stoned them with stone. It was a picture of the wrath of God upon his sin. In Acts chapter 19, you had all these books of magic and wizardry that the people were using. And people, here's what it says, many that believed came and confessed and showed their deeds. And many of them also which use curious arts brought their books together and burned them before all men. And they burned these books in a huge bonfire. What is that? It's a picture of the destruction, the wrath of God. And then in Revelation chapter 20 verse 15, we're told, whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And so that again is a picture of the wrath of God. The destruction of a body or an object by fire is a picture of the wrath of God, which is something that Christians do not want to picture. A fourth reason you should choose burial is because the way you dispose of a body is the way that you show honor or dishonor to the person who has been deceased. The way you dispose of a body is the way that you show honor or dishonor to them. In 1 Kings chapter 22, you have the story of the death of Ahab and how they washed the chariot in the pool of Samaria and the dogs licked up his blood. And what was that saying? The dogs licked up his blood. It was a picture of the fact that he was a dishonorable person. In 2 Kings chapter 9, verses 34 through 37, Jezebel had been thrown down from the wall and her body had gone down there, and Jehu and his chariot had run over her, and then the dogs came up and ate her body. But Jehu said, Go see now this cursed woman, bury her, for she is a king's daughter. And then they remembered, I won't even read the rest of that, it's pretty gross, but why this terrible destruction of Jezebel's body? I mean, you could just say, well, she's dead, but there was more to it than that. The reason her body was destroyed by the dogs was to show dishonor to her. In Jeremiah chapter 22, verse 19, it was said of Zedekiah, he shall be buried with the burial of an ass. And it was saying that it didn't matter how he was buried. They just didn't care what happened to him. And see, the way you dispose of a body shows the respect to the person themselves. Listen to Jeremiah chapter 16, verse 4. They shall die of grievous deaths. They shall not be lamented, neither shall they be buried. You see, it's an honor to bury a body, but they shall be as dung upon the face of the earth, and they shall be consumed by the sword and by famine. Jeremiah chapter 36, verse 30. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, he shall have none to sit upon the throne of David, and his dead body shall be cast out in the day to the heat, and in the night to the frost. And so it was a terrible thing if his body was not properly cared for. Some time back, my wife was having a discussion with one of our granddaughters. And this granddaughter had heard about cremation. And she heard that somebody was going to be cremated. And my granddaughter looked at her grandma and said, "Grandma, what is cremation?" And she said, "Well, it's when they burn the body instead of burying it." And she said, my granddaughter said, "Well, why would they burn the body?" And her grandma said, "Well, probably, honey, to save money. It costs a lot to bury a body." And then you could see the wheels turning as my granddaughter, 10 years old, was just thinking through this thing. And here's someone who didn't really, listen to me, here's a Christian girl who doesn't know nearly, I suppose, what I've shared with you from the Bible today. You wouldn't expect her to know that, but listen to what her response was. She said to her grandma, "You know, it just doesn't seem like the thing to do to honor someone." There's a fifth reason why a Christian should choose burial instead of cremation, and that is because the Christian's body belongs to God and is not ours to disfigure or destroy at all. 1 Corinthians 6:19, "What know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own, for you're bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit which are God's." Now listen to me, if something doesn't belong to me, then I don't have a right to do with it just any way I want to do. And that is true not only of me during life, it is also true of me during death. That is the reason you don't disfigure the body. The Bible warned in the Old Testament about the people picking up the practices of the heathen and doing all kinds of weird things to their body. And that's what we're seeing in our day now. We're seeing people piercing their bodies in all kinds of crazy places. Do you know I have seen that in other countries? I was in Papua New Guinea in 1992. I saw people who had been cannibals, who had been heathen, who had never heard the gospel, who had been exposed to nothing. But once they heard the gospel, I saw people whose ears, they had, their ears were not here. They were all the way down to here. A huge hole in their ear where they had gradually stretched it to where it was totally disfigured. No way they could have gotten it back like it was before. And they were happy Christians. Thank God. That doesn't have anything to do with somebody getting saved. You can still get saved. But what Christians need to ask is, why are we doing these things, disfiguring our bodies like this? Is this coming from the Bible, from Christianity? Is this coming from heathenism? Where is it coming from? And so, the body is not ours to disfigure or to destroy. Romans 14, 18, "Whether we live therefore or die, we are the Lord's." Number six, why should Christians choose burial? Because there is one rare verse in the Bible that describes cremation as a direct transgression of God's law. You might want to write this down. Amos chapter 2, verse 1. "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Moab and for four I will not turn away the punishment thereof." What were those transgressions of Moab that God said he was going to punish him for? He says it at the end of the verse. "Because he burned the bones of the king of Edom into lime." He burned that man's body. He was not supposed to. He directly transgressed God's law. So why should a Christian choose burial? First of all, it was the ordinary practice by godly people in the Bible. Secondly, though the body may be dead, God is not yet done with the body. And we plant the body because it is a picture. We bury it because we as Christians believe in the resurrection. Third, the destruction of a body or an object by fire is a picture of the wrath of God. Fourth, the way you dispose of a body is a way that you show honor or dishonor to a person. Fifth, a Christian body belongs to God. It's not ours to disfigure or destroy. Sixth, God described cremation as a transgression of His law. And seventh, cremation is rooted in the darkness of false heathen religion. That's really where it comes from. Cremation does not come from Christianity. It specifically comes from Hinduism. David Cloud said the entire process of cremation in America is done out of the view, usually, of loved ones in the public. But not so in places like South Asia, where we lived and served Christ for 10 years. It would seem that any Christian who could stand beside the, quote, holy river Bagmata in Kathmandu, Nepal, and observe the burning of the body of the Hindu and the heathen death rituals would cast aside in repulsion every thought of cremation as being an acceptable Christian practice. A few years ago, I stood 3 or so feet from a burning corpse with a missionary pastor from Singapore and his wife who were visiting us. The head of the corpse was already burnt beyond recognition. I'm not reading all of this. The lower legs and feet were unscorched as they were protruding from the pile of burning wood and stubble upon which the man's body lay. The professional Hindu burners were poking the body from time to time to keep the members in the fire and adding stubble and wood as needed. My wife, a nurse with experience working with lepers in a hospital in a very remote part of Asia and in an intensive care ward in the United States, stood with another friend observing the ghastly sight from a distance, unwilling to come any closer. The air for 100 yards or more was filled with the unmistakable stomach-turning stench of burning human flesh. When the fire had burned most of the body, the ashes and remaining members were shoved into the river. This is cremation as it has been practiced by heathen religions for centuries, but without the sanitization adopted in more technically advanced areas. He says cremation is clearly a heathen practice. Why do the Hindus and the Buddhists and those of other religions cremate? Because it connects with their belief not in the resurrection. Stay with me now. Listen to this. It is not their belief in resurrection. It is their belief in reincarnation. I have an article here that I printed off the internet that is from the country of Bali. And it's interesting. It says, strange as it seems, it's in their cremation ceremonies that the Balinese have their greatest fun. Every 5 years, with a year being composed of 210 days, he says, every 5 years they do cremations. People are buried temporarily until that time that they must be cremated every 5 years, which in our calendar would be more like every 4 years. But they must be, listen to this, they must be cremated, quote, as otherwise the path to reincarnation is cut off. Burial fits with the Christian doctrine of the resurrection. Cremation fits with the Hindu doctrine of reincarnation. What is the difference? Folks, the Bible says, appointed unto man wants to die, and after this, the judgment, you're not coming around again. Your spirit and your soul, if you die and you're saved, it's going to heaven to be with Jesus. But what the Hindus believe is that you are going to be reincarnated as a different creature of some sort. You may be a cow. You may be a monkey. You may be a bug. You may be another human being, lower down, higher up, or whatever. You could come back as any kind of creature. Now, wait a minute. If your body is still around, then your soul is not free to go and become another body of whatever sort it is. So it must be burned. It must be cremated. Tommy Tillman, our missionary to Thailand and Nepal, or, well, whatever, Mongolia, I believe it is, told about witnessing a Buddhist cremation where he said they took the body, they poured it, poured gas on the body, they put sticks around it, tires around it, set it on fire, and he said the flames were leaping upward, and he said, I heard a lady crying, goodbye, husband, I'll never see you again, and I heard children saying, goodbye, daddy, I'll never see you again. Why? It's all over. It's all done. For the Christian folks, there's no need to burn. It's not all done. We can bury because we're going to see them again. Thank God, what a wonderful, powerful, blessed thought. Having said all of this, thank God for His power and His mercy. The bodies of saints buried centuries ago have long ago turned to dust. Many great Christians were burned to death for their faith. There were Christians whose bodies were buried and people hated them so bad that they poured out their wrath on them by digging them up and burning their body. Why did they do that? Because it was their way of showing dishonor and disrespect to that body. We're going to just destroy you completely. Can I tell you something? You can't destroy a Christian completely. It's not possible. Wherever the body, whatever condition it is in, someday a sovereign, all-powerful, all-knowing God will bring all those molecules back together. And this corruption shall put on incorruption, and this mortal shall put on immortality, and then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. And the question for everyone here tonight is this: have you been saved? Have you trusted Jesus as your Savior? Is He living in your heart? So that no matter what happens to your body, because anything could happen to any of us. Somebody could be burned up in a house fire tonight or a car fire. We don't know. And that's underneath the sovereignty of God. And we can't even begin to understand it all. But we can be ready. Nobody has to leave here tonight without being ready to go. I began with that story about that fellow that the preacher tried to witness to and went soul winning on Tuesday, and on Thursday he was going to talk to him again, but on Wednesday he was killed instantly in a car automobile accident. But at the funeral home, the preacher spoke to the brother of the man who had been killed. He was also lost, urged him to trust Christ, and the young man said, look, I know my brother died unexpectedly and went to hell, but I'm not going to go to hell. I'm just not ready to get saved right now, but I promise you, I'm going to get saved before I die, but I'll call you when I'm ready. How many of you ever heard that? I'll be ready sometime, I chanted, in the future. The very next day, that young man was driving down a deserted country road and dropped a cigarette on the floorboard. When he reached down to pick it up, he ran off the road and hit a tree. He wasn't injured in the head or the chest, but he got a terrible cut in his leg. He was miles from anybody or anything, no houses, no traffic. His car wouldn't run. And 5 hours later, somebody came by and found him lying in the middle of the road in a pool of blood, dead. He had said, I'm not going to go to hell like my brother did. I'm just not ready now. But when I'm ready, I'll give you a call. And in less than 72 hours, as far as we know, unless that fellow lying there cried out to God for salvation, two brothers went to hell. Both intended to get saved, but later is what we will do. And the most important thing of all is that everyone know for sure Jesus is their Savior, because none of us know when we're going to die, but we do know this: it is appointed unto man once to die, and after this, the judgment. Are you ready to go? Would you bow with me, please?